Great. Glenn, can you do the roll?
I'll do the roll call. It's a pleasure for you, Jeff. On the call, we have on the PDP call of the 21st of April, we have Jeff Newman, James Bladel, Paul Diaz, Alan Greenberg, and Alex Gakuru. And for staff, we have Marika Kordix and Glenn DeSaint-Joachim, myself. Thank you, Jeff. Over to you. We have apologies also, sorry, from Avery Doria, David Maher, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, and have I left off anybody that you know of?
Not that I know of. Thank you, Glenn. Just one correction for the record. I think you said it was the 21st. It's only the 14th of April.
Oh, sorry. Yes, indeed. Sorry, it is the 14th of April. Yes.
But we're looking forward to next week. and we will have a call on the 21st, so we can say that again next week. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, everyone, for showing
Thanks,
up. We do have a little bit less attendance than normal, but I still think it's enough to start to continue going through the public comment review tool that was updated as of April 12th. That's now showing on Adobe for those of you that are on. And we made really good progress last week in going through this. Remember, the goal of this is to go through, to respond to each of the comments, and then to make any necessary changes, if any, to the proposed final report that we put out before San Francisco. So with that said, let's get started. We are on page 7 of the review tool for comment, or I should say recommendation number 16, which is on flexibility of the process. And we received comments from Stefan Van Gelder, the IMTA, and the business constituency. Alan, you have a comment? Or is it on this subject?
Sorry, I was on mute here. no, going back to an earlier one, I had missed the very beginning of the last call, and the item raised by Stefan on should we keep issue report requesting open to other groups other than the GNSO. The answer the work group came up with doesn't really address his question.
Sorry, can you just, which number does this go to?
It's recommendation number 1.
Okay, thank you. That's on back to page 2.
Page
okay.
2.
So this was, what's the rationale for leaving in place the possibility for an advisory committee or the board to request an issue report?
Yeah. The answer really says, why should we leave it open to any advisory committee, not only the ALAC? He was asking a wider question than that, of why should we let it open to any advisory committee, you know, with the reference to why should we allow outside influences to influence what the GNSO can do. And I don't think the answer we have there really addresses that. And so, I'm sorry I wasn't here when the discussion was held. Hello?
Hello?
I think Jeff may have disappeared.
Sounds like he got cut off.
He still looks connected on Meeting View, but... Well, maybe
Jeff,
then stepping
talking,
in.
We can't hear you.
Alan, what would you suggest that we add or respond to address this question? Do you have any suggestions?
I would think it should, if anything, it should stop after the first sentence, but agreed not to do so. The rest of it addresses why should the ALAC, why should we be allowing the ALAC, the other groups in addition to the ALAC, which wasn't the question he asked. His question, as I read it, was saying, why should we allow any advisory committee, or the board for that matter, to influence what the GNSO will do? My personal feeling is, the answer is that outside influences of influencing the GNSO is exactly the reason it's included. You know, that was a deliberate action by the original drafters of the bylaws and then us to allow outside influences to raise issues with the GNSO. But if we don't want to, put the gauntlet down and put that in the answer, I think it should just say we've considered it but decided to keep it. I'm done.
Right, and this is Mark, if I can maybe comment, because I think part of the reason for our response is because I think in his comment and in the complete comment, he even raises the question, has actually anyone even used it? And I think part of our response was as well saying, well, even though it has only been used by the ALAC to date, we do think it's important to leave this option open. And I think another response we can say about the outside influences, because I think part of his broader comment was as well, how does this affect workload? In theory, the GNSO could, of course, get swamped by requests for issue reports. But I think there the gating factor is still as well that, of course, there is the next step for the official vote on initiation of a PDP where the council can still say, well, we appreciate the request being made and the issue being raised by an advisory committee, but we don't think it needs to move further than where we are now. So I think that concern is addressed
in
that way.
The concept of advisory committee swamping the GNSO with simply the need to consider issue reports, I think is a bit far-fetched.
Right.
Certainly it hasn't happened.
Hey guys, can you guys hear me now?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I was listening. I was not on mute, at least from my side. So I don't know if the operator muted me or what. So have you guys? I heard the tail end of that. So I believe Marika, as I was hanging up, was sort of saying that what I was going to say on it, which is so. Alan, are we good on that now, or? Do we need to do something different?
Yeah, if his comment was saying, has anyone used it, then I think we should say it has only... Yeah, okay, then I guess I can live with it. I'm not sure I like ignoring his his question about outside influences, but I'm also not looking to pick a fight, so maybe better to leave it as it is. Then.
Yeah, I think that's probably wise.
Okay. Then I retract. Let's go back to the regular today's work. Paul's had his hand up, though, I think.
Okay, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I want to fully support Alan on this one. I mean, I think that's the whole point. I'm uncomfortable with Stefan's use of the, in quotations, outside influences. That's what an advisory committee is all about. It's providing advice and trying to get something addressed that maybe the other constituent members of the GNSO are not focused on. I would note, and perhaps we can work into the response, though, something that we did discuss last week when we went over this, the concern that I raised that the other major advisory committee, the GAC, if in the future a more involved GAC were to start making all sorts of demands for policy work, I think that there needs to be a clear understanding that the GAC doesn't just show up, demand all these things, and then kind of disappear into the shadows again. We run the risk here of GAC using its advisory committee status to create undue workload. And, it's very hard to imagine any GAC members participating in policy work, but it's not that hard to imagine them levying all sorts of requests. So I guess with that, I ultimately will agree with Alan, too, that maybe we should just let sleeping dogs lie with this one. But if we are going to tweak the response, maybe something to the effect that, and it doesn't apply to ALAC, they always participate in policy work, but for other advisory committees really focused on the GAC, that should they step up their desire or request for policy work, that they also participate in those processes.
I support the concept. I'm not sure there's a good opportunity where to put that or how we would pass judgment on whether their support has been, their participation has been adequate or not.
If
we try passing judgment on that, there's a lot of GNSO constituencies and stakeholder groups that may not meet the target as with the ALAC also. So
I think we're getting into areas that might be difficult to assess, and
Okay. Marika, with full appreciation of a discussion that I hadn't had a chance to listen to yet, and what's been said here, I'll accept what we have and let's go on.
Okay. So if we go on to number 16, or page 7, recommendation 16, comment by Stefan is there's no practice to allow a counselor to defer a PDP for one meeting, although there is an informal practice of allowing a GNSO, SG, or constituency to request one of its representatives that a vote on a motion is deferred. Is this what's referred to here? I think the answer is yes. That's pretty easy. INTA and BC, they said there's general agreement with the modification time frames as proposed, but INTA suggests that a request for deferral would need to be seconded in order to avoid delays. And the BC says that it's a dangerous codifying. It seems like a dangerous precedent. However, if we do propose codifying it, to make clear that it's not a cumulative right, I guess making it clear that, you know, it's not each stakeholder group gets one deferral every time. So if the registrars defer a motion one meeting, that the IP stakeholder group can't, or that the IP constituency shouldn't be able to request a deferral at the next meeting. So in theory, you could have, what, six deferrals. So I think the answer to Stefan's question is, yes, that's what we're talking about codifying, that no, it's not intended to be cumulative, at least the way we discussed it. And let's talk about the issue of whether it should need to be seconded. So, Alan, you have your hand raised?
Yeah, I think we should skirt the whole issue of the details of the process by simply saying that should the GNSO have a process for delaying votes based on stakeholder group or and or counselor requests, that applies to this. In other words, they are obliged to vote at the next meeting or whatever the rule, you know, within N days, whatever the rules say. Should the GNSO have procedures for deferring a vote, then they are applicable. You know, our timeline doesn't override that, and let the GNSO set its operational rules. I don't think we need to do it in parallel and then change it if the GNSO changes its rules. Just make reference to it being allowed and leave it up to the GNSO rules to apply.
Okay, so that's another tactic we could take. James?
Yeah, this is James speaking. Thanks, Jeff. I think I tend to agree most of what Alan was saying here, in that some of the comments almost want to pull us into the role of defining or creating a special operational procedure for council when it comes to voting on PDPs, which I think is what we're doing, and I think that's okay. And maybe we can clarify instead of saying, I lost my idea here, but it had something to do with using the term meeting cycles. And that way to ensure that it wouldn't be a cumulative deferral. And I think that, you know, we really should tread very carefully here into getting very prescriptive about what council can and can't do on this. I think they're going to do what we want them to do, but we should express that that we don't want them to delay these things indefinitely, and that we don't want single individuals or constituencies to have that ability.
So merging that with Alan's comments, you'd basically say that, you know, we have time frames in here. However, should, like Alan said, should the council have a process for allowing a stakeholder group or constituency to defer consideration for one meeting, that would be in line with what, essentially in line with what we're recommending. In other words, it wouldn't go against the or unreasonably delay the PDP.
Yeah, I was going to add that we could put an upper limit on it, but the wording you just used of should the council have a rule for delaying by one meeting covers that without explicitly saying it, so I like yours better.
Okay. Marika, you got that?
Yes.
Okay, great. So then we move on to appeals. This is where we talked a little bit about an appeals process in our report. It was very lightweight, and ALAC supported it. Right? It was basically to just have this is an appeal if an issue is, or I should say, a PDP is not commenced. That there should be some discussion between the proposing advisory committee and the GNSO to understand what why that was the case. So that's supported, so that's good. Recommendation 19 about chartering had comments from a number of different organizations, including Stefan, the registries, INTA, and CADNET. Stefan said the recommendation to change bylaws at the end of the recommendation to GNSO bylaws to make it clear it's not the same document as is being referred to in earlier in the paragraph. Marika, have you looked at that?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think he's confused there because I think he just means that it's referring to another part of the bylaws, where maybe in the first one we speak about the Annex A and, you know, the I think the voting of the GNSO Council is defined in a different section because I think he's referring to GNSO bylaws, but there are no GNSO bylaws. There's a section on the GNSO in the bylaws. So I think that's what he means, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, we can look at that and just make sure it's clear then. From the registries that we explicitly state what a majority vote means according to the GNSO operating procedures. Any modifications to a working group charter made after adoption by the GNSO Council of such charter, however, may be adopted by a majority vote of each house of the GNSO Council. Did we not, are they saying, I can't remember now, I'm part of the registries, not just capitalizing majority or just creating a reference? Because I think majority is defined in the bylaws itself. Maybe that's just breaking
well,
you and
question.
I.
Is the concept of majority vote defined in the bylaws? I'll check.
It is in Annex A, I believe. I'm saying that now. I thought it was definitive, but now I'm going back on my own definitiveness. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't think it's actually in Annex A, but I think it's, again, in that part that describes the GNSO Council on the different voting levels. And I think here, indeed, it's just a clarification because what we say in the recommendation is majority vote of the GNSO Council. I think it's just specifying that what a majority vote in the GNSO Council actually means, which is a majority of each house. So I think it's just a clarifying comment as I understand it.
Good. Okay, so that's pretty easy then. INTA agrees that a working group charter should be required. INTA would suggest setting a reasonable time frame for the development and approval of the charter to ensure that this task is completed as soon as possible and does not delay the formation of a working group. Well, I don't believe we actually set any kind of time frame for this, have we?
That's correct.
So what do you guys think on maybe providing guidance as opposed to a mandatory timeline? Well, you know what? One of the reasons we didn't do it, if I'm recalling now, is that we did not specify whether a charter needed could be prior to the PDP vote or afterwards. So it is possible that, if not likely, that a number of PDPs may come to the council with a charter already. But I guess that wouldn't violate. If we say a charter should be developed no later than 45 days after a vote to commence the PDP, or something like that, that wouldn't, if they had done the charter already, that would still be consistent. So let me go to Alan and then Marika.
Yeah, I would support not requiring that a charter be done before approval. You know, that almost forces a drafting group to be set up, and you know, it's likely to be the same interested parties. Except
yes.
In the case of a drafting group, you're going to get the negative people coming in to try to reduce it. The council is still going to have to approve the charter. So I would support keeping it flexible, setting a timeline perhaps, but that's all.
Yeah, I didn't mean to Alan, I didn't mean to imply. I was just accounting for the possibility that it could be done prior, but I was not trying to say that anyone was suggesting.
No, I was agreeing with you.
Okay.
Going back to the majority, the term majority vote is not defined in the bylaws, so we shouldn't use it, but we should be more explicit, as the registry suggestion says.
Okay. Thanks.
Or recommend it be defined in the bylaws, but either way, it should be consistent.
Okay, I agree. Marika, you have another comment?
Yeah, it doesn't work. I would just like to caution a little bit about setting a timeline. I think we can maybe make a recommendation, but practice has shown that it's drafting teams, indeed, it's a group of volunteers that need to gather. Often development of a charter at that stage is not the highest priority with other issues going on, so sometimes it takes a bit of time. And it also depends on the issue that's on the table. Sometimes it's very easy and straightforward because certain charter questions are just drawn from the issues report and, you know, copied and pasted into a charter document. But, for example, if you looked at the vertical integration drafting team that developed that chart, I think that went a lot more time into that because it was very complicated and very contentious as well, what should go in there and what shouldn't go in there. So, I mean, maybe we can say, like, as soon as possible or feasible or something like that, but I'm cautioned a bit about setting, you know, time frames that might not reflect the complexity or also workload that's apparent at that stage.
Okay, so Alan, you have another comment, or is that left?
No, I guess in retrospect, I support what Marika just said. We have a council right now which is taking the attitude, in at least some cases, that rules must be followed, and I don't think we'd want a rule that would force a bad product out of this. So we may say, we'll generally be done within a certain amount of time or something, but I think we want to allow flexibility.
Okay. I think that's fair enough. We could say that the GNSO, when it votes, if it votes to approve a PDP, should, as a recommendation, should set a timeline if they, in their, one of the options is that we could say that the GNSO, upon approving a PDP, should set a timeline for the completion of the charter. How do people feel about that?
I'm not sure we need that, and the GNSO always has the right, if the group hasn't come back in two consecutive meetings, to lay down the law until it has to deliver by a certain date or something. I don't think it's worth our words to do that.
Okay, fair enough. Anyone disagree with that? Okay, let's go to page 9 on recommendation 21. Oh, I'm sorry, CADNA had said they support the recommendation, notes that it's important to ensure that the charter establish a clear set of goals to work towards in order to be able to properly measure the progress. Okay, I think that's just an agreement statement. Marika?
Yeah, and this is Marika. I think that's something where we can as well refer to the GNSO working group guidelines that provide, different elements that should be in charters, among which indeed, goals of work and milestones and things like that. And maybe on the previous comment or the suggestion you made, maybe that's just something to note in the review tool by just saying, the council always has the option to set a certain time frame for a drafting team to deliver a charter. It's not something that needs to be mandated, but that flexibility, is in the council's hands.
Okay, I think those are good notes. Jumping to 21, this is on advisory committee supporting organization input. There are comments from the registries and the INTA. Registries have said that the work team should consider more detailed procedures for communication and responses to the GAC in an effort to improve involvement of the GAC and or GAC members earlier in policy development and implementation efforts. Registries also suggest that interim procedures be included regarding the involvement of community working groups in a GNSO policy development process until such time that community working group procedures are developed and implemented. INTA says that additional explanation is needed regarding how to best involve ACs and SOs. in a PDP, a clarification regarding how much input must be sought would be useful, as well as the manner and time frame in which the working group should respond to AC and SO comments. So let's take the first one of the registries. This one is a difficult one, and I don't think that we talk about cross working groups with respect to formal PDPs. Marika, help me keep me honest here. I think we talk about the working group guidelines, but not here.
I think that's correct.
Alan?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I know what it means. It's quite clear that a PDP working group is a GNSO group. Nobody is talking about anything other than that. So what is the involvement of community working groups in a GNSO PDP mean? Does that mean, another group can input into the process?
Well, maybe they're not saying,
it's not allowed to, but...
So let's take a hypothetical. Let's say that the DISO working group comes up with some recommendations or something to do with security, obviously, and they say it would be great if registries could do X, Y, and Z. Registries and registrars could do X, Y, and Z. Now, if the GNSO wants to adopt it, the council could always adopt the findings through its normal process, but let's say it wants to have that be a consensus policy to go into the contracts, I guess in theory it would have to then go through a formal GNSO PDP. And
you're back to a fast pass. The potential rationale why we might want a fast pass is just that kind of thing. It's cut and dry. Everyone agrees, but we need to go through the process, and we've already decided we're not doing that, or at least we're not going to specify it today.
Well, I wasn't necessarily talking about fast path, but what I was saying is more, it would consider it as one strong input into the whole PDP process. Well, I'm sure that document would be used as a basis to draft the charter or the issue report. The charter would certainly go into the work of the group. I'm not sure we need anything other than,
But that, Jeff, that's not a working group influencing the PDP process. That's a working group being the rationale for creating a PDP process.
Correct.
Which, if you look at the current IRTP PDPs, they were created by a process, that may well have been cross-constituency working groups that we didn't call that. That's just the normal process.
Okay, so I'm not sure what we can do here or what we need to do here. But on the first part, it says we should consider more detailed procedures communicating and responses to the GAC. My gut reaction to that is a very complicated issue, one that is being addressed directly between the GNSO and the GAC. I think we should agree with the comment that overall, in all of its activities, that the GNSO and GAC should find ways to improve communication and improve involvement in each other's policy developments.
Yeah, the wording the ALAC added to the working group guidelines did address that to some extent. It says, just sending out emails is not sufficient. We need personal contact.
Right, but yes, I agree, and this is a big issue that we're trying to work on at a council level, and I think we should just reiterate that and just agree that. But it's not us that needs to create the detailed procedures. I think it's really more of an operations issue. And it's not unique to PDPs. It's really for all of its work.
It's not unique to PDPs, but it's absolutely crucial for PDPs. So that warrants us making a comment, but not setting the procedures.
Right. So I think we should do that. I definitely agree with that. Anyone disagree with that? Yeah, we support the comment the registry has made We say that, yes, we agree that more detailed procedures should be in place. We view that it's important not just in everything that the council or GNSO does, but extremely important in cases of policy development of PDPs. But it's not really our place to develop at this point the specific detailed procedures. So I think it's the similar answer to the INTA comments, which are explanation is needed regarding how to best involve. So how much input must be sought versus should be, and the time and manner. Anyone have any ideas on that one? Clarification regarding how much input must be sought be useful. So we say input must be sought, and they're saying clarify how much how such. So don't we say that? And maybe this is similar to. Alan, your comment to the working group guidelines. We put that here as well.
I think perhaps we simply agree wholeheartedly that this is an issue which is going to require significant focus over the next couple of years, but we're not pretending we know all the answers.
All agrees with that, so let's go with it. Okay, 22, we got complete agreement from Stefan, so that's great. Oh, Alex?
Oh, sorry, I'm back on the hold and I was moving the mute. I was saying maybe one of the other things that we could do is we could ask the work groups to demonstrate or to explain how they are seeking the input from the various ACs and SOs towards achieving this. Then we leave it to the work group so that they can show, okay, we are involving this AC and SO in this manner. They can list it themselves so that we can be seen we have left to them to demonstrate they're involving them. Thanks.
So as part of the final report to make sure that the working group covers the outreach and what it did to solicit input from... it's probably broader. It's broader than just ACs and SOs. It's how they did outreach in general. I think that's a fair comment. How do people feel about that? Marika, is that something we can add?
There's a comment.
This is Marika. I think it's partly as well codifying existing practice, because what we normally do in the in the different reports, we do list the public comments received, and if any experts participated in the working group, those conversations are normally reflected as well. So I think that's basically codifying what working groups already tend to do when they write their reports.
Well, I think that's part of it. It's not just what they got. It's more how do they try to get that? In other words, did the working group take the efforts? It's more of a proactive as opposed to a reactive or passive role. Right? You could put something out for comments and then just react to the comments you get, sort of like what we're doing now. Or you could actually, working groups generally don't show what efforts were made to get outside input in. Does that make sense? So, in other words, did it just have a comment period, or did the chair of the working group reach out personally to the GAC and the ALAC? Was there a teleconference call? Was a webinar? Were there efforts to reach out directly to those that may be impacted? Marika?
This is Marika. I mean, looking at some of the existing working groups, I know some of the outreach, for example, is done when public comment forums open and those are sent out specifically to you know, groups or organizations that people think they have an interest in. But I don't know if we're really adding an additional burden on working groups if they have to start documenting as well, you know, who did they reach out to, who did they send the emails to, when did they speak to them. And, you know, I see the value, and I think encouraging them to do that, you know, I think is helpful. But I'm not really sure whether we should require them to document that as well in their reports, because that would really add an additional dimension to the, you know, lot of work they're already doing, basically.
Okay, Alex, you have a thought on that? Alex, your hand is raised. I'm not sure if that's left over. Okay, so Marika, why don't we at least I think it's done though. I think you know that kind of thing is done normally in the reports anyway, where it says that, you know, we had this webinar, we did this, we reached out with surveys.
Right, that is done. But if, for example, we don't document, like normally when we, you know, open a public comment period, we do ask working group members, like, you know, can you please, you know, use your networks or blogs or whatever you're using to, you know, promote this and reach out. You know, we don't document, like, well, person X sent it here and person Y posted there. But it's a standing practice. We do indeed, you know, record if we did a webinar, or if indeed we invited experts that, you know, provided input, or if there were specific, you know, requests for information sent to certain groups. So that is indeed recorded.
Okay.
So I think we, you know, it's no problem to say that, you know, working groups should be encouraged to provide as much detail as they can on the outreach and input they got from other organizations. I think that's, you know, that would fit well, I think, with the comment, and hopefully as well, well, what Alex commented.
Okay, I agree with that. Okay, if we jump then to 23, which I'm skipping 22 because it's just agreement, is clarify what in-scope means. And so the registries and CADNA had a comment to this. The registries agree that the definition provided by the work team is one definition of in scope, and that this definition is important. The registry stakeholder group suggests that this definition of in scope with regard, that the definition of in scope with regard to possible consensus policies be included here for clarity. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I actually had a question, and I hope Jeff, you might know, as it comes from the registries, because I read this as just meaning we should include the definition of scope, as, you know, some people interpret it as being just, you know, linked to consensus policy, just to contrast the two. Or do the registry mean that that is also a valid definition of in scope?
No, it was the former. It was that you should just compare and contrast in this section, because I think we did that in the preliminary report.
Because that's why I'm actually confused, because if you look at the recommendation, it actually does say that, because we basically say that, you know, that within scope means within scope of ICANN's mission and more specifically the role of the GNSO, as opposed to within scope of the contractor's party's definition of consensus policies. So I'm a bit confused as why do you still think it needs to be called out? So,
well, because I think, so in the discussion that we had, it was when you say as opposed to, you're then now requiring each person that reads this document to now read each of the registry agreements. And if you could provide more detail here, it would be easier, just for clarity's sake.
Okay, so you just mean the definition of consensus policies as it is in the contract. That's what it's trying to say.
Like as an example, you could say, for example, the registries have this as their definition, or most of the registries. I'm sure it's not completely uniform. And then you could say in the registrar agreements, here's what consensus or in scope means for them, even as a footnote or something like that, so that they don't have to go back to other documents.
Okay, I understand now.
Alan?
Yeah, we're perpetuating the ICANN practice of using the exact same term in multiple ways here. And maybe we should move away from that. Maybe we should use the term in GNSO scope and in consensus policy scope as two unique things, so that they're not confused on a regular basis. Simply highlighting the fact that this is in scope A, not in scope B, when they're both spelled exactly the same way, just reinforces what we do in ICANN all the time. And maybe we should break some new ground and actually use two different terms in the new bylaws that go along with this.
Well, so I agree that we shouldn't have terms that are the same, that mean different things. But if you look at the contracts, they actually don't use the term in scope. The contracts, for example, the registries say consensus policies shall mean those specifications or policies established, blah, 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 blah. There's nowhere in it said nowhere in the registry agreements do the words in scope appear.
Then excuse me. Then we should either be consistent with that or come up with terms that are in fact different. But let's not propagate the multiple definitions of in scope in what we're producing.
Which is what
the current wording does.
Yeah, so I hear what you're saying, and I think that's right. So instead of using the term in scope of a consensus policy, we could clarify we're only using in scope to mean in scope of a PDP. And I know what you're saying, Alan, and let's look at the language and see how we can do that. I think you're right.
That's fine.
See, CADNA says that they support the recommendation. Notes that with regard to the initiation of a PDP, it is important to define how the proposed issue fits within the scope of ICANN's mission and how it addresses the provisions laid out in the affirmation of code. So I think that's just agreement with what we said. And then the last one I want to cover...
Actually, they're using a third definition of in scope.
Which is affirmation of commitments?
With ICANN scope. I mean, we were just talking about GNSO scope and consensus policy scope. They're adding an ICANN scope one, which presumably is a superset of GNSO scope.
Yeah. So it's important to define how the proposed issue fits within scope of ICANN. Well, by definition, if it fits within the scope of GNSO, it fits within the scope of ICANN. You can't have something that's in scope of GNSO that's not in scope of ICANN. Conversely, you can't have something that's not in scope of ICANN be in scope for GNSO.
Based on some of our discussions, you could.
I'm not sure much else other than that needs to be stated.
Noted.
I think we note it and move on. So working methods, registries, ALAC, and INTA commented. It would be helpful if some examples of possible different working methods are provided. ALAC is pleased to see that the working is supportive of flexibility. That's an agreement. INTA is supportive. But to clarify who may or who is responsible for suggesting and developing such alternate processes, as well as approvals required to implement such processes. Well, I think the INTA one, the response to the council, and I believe we say as long as the essential elements are included, it's really the rest of it that doesn't fall within the mandatory is council's discretion by a majority of each house, I would assume. Alan?
Yeah, I disagree with the registry comment. I don't think it is our job to define what the alternate methods might be, just that should they exist, we don't forbid them.
Well, they're not. I think the registries are just saying, can we provide? It would be helpful if we could provide examples.
Well, we have example, a task force. You know, the ones we used to, the rules we used to use, a committee of the whole. There's all sorts of different things we might do. Delegating Jeff Newman as God and letting him set the rules.
I like that one.
Yeah, well, I thought you might.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. To Kadna's comment, I do believe that in the manual we did speak about that, I think, in the when we drafted the proposed final report, and I believe, we need to look it up, but I believe we provided some language around that in the manual where indeed it clarifies that it's a GNSO council that could determine any potential different working methods. But I can look that up, and if so, we can reference that in our response.
Yeah, let's do that. I think that's good. It's just referencing it, make sure it's not limiting, so it's not it's only these methods, but these are some examples that have been used in the past that may be, should the council decide, used in the future. Let's make, you know, these are not the only examples. We'll be clear on that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, let's see if we can nail down one or two others. CADMA supports the public comment period, so that's good. That's 28, 29. INTA supports, but further recommends setting a reasonable time frame, for example, 30 days after the closing of public comment form, to ensure comments can be relayed to the working group. So is this a... and the working group shall review as opposed to responsible for reviewing. Marika, on the INTA comment, is this basically saying that the summary should be done within 30 days? You're talking about the summary?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think that's what they mean. And if I can just comment on that, I think in practice we normally provide it way before that time. Again, I would just be hesitant here of setting a, you know, exact limit of 30 days, as in certain instances there might be reasons why it cannot be done in 30 days, maybe due to the volume of comments or other work that's ongoing. But I think in practice on at least policy-related public comment forums, I believe staff is normally pretty quick in the turnaround time and providing that to working groups for their review.
Well, what if we said something like should be provided within 30 days after absent exigent circumstances?
Should generally.
Right.
I think that's fine.
That's fine.
Okay. Paul agrees. Okay, good. And then, so 29, I think 29 is a good change. I think we kind of, I remember at the meeting we all just looked at each other and said, yeah. It's a more direct way of saying it as opposed to the passive way that we said it. Because saying responsible for reviewing indicates that we could delegate that to someone else, as opposed to saying shall review the comments.
Anything that removes two whole words is good.
I think I want to stop here, because I think if we start talking about implementation, I think this is a good place to stop. Everyone agree?
Yep.
So... All right, great. So we are having a call. We are having a call next week at normal time. It's a weekly call. In fact, we probably should send out a note saying, unless you hear otherwise, assume it's every Thursday at the same time. And then we'll kick off from we'll kick off on comment 31. Marika, you have a.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that I won't be available in the next two meetings, but Margie will cover. So no need to suspend calls, but I just won't be there.
Okay, well, I'm sure you'll listen to all the tapes and eagerly. Great. So let's, that's good. Let's end the call here. We can stop the recording, and I will talk to everyone a week from today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, guys.